Hi, how are you? Thanks for tuning in. I want to welcome you to the pod. This is The Benefit of the Doubt, a podcast about politics and culture with Quentin and Thane, in which two friends push each other to think, learn, and grow while discussing some of the most important and contentious topics of the day. Stay tuned for hot takes, plenty of mistakes, and the occasional moment of brilliance. And with that, let's get to it. Quentin.
Happy Friday, brother.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I know you don't like these introductions, our traditional Quentin, how are ya?
You're right.
You know, I find that we are already in a place 10 episodes in where we have some traditions worth maintaining. And I feel like you maybe be pushing back on that a little bit. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's time for something new. I think it's time to shake it up. That's not a political thing. That's just kind of how I'm wired.
Huh.
So maybe we should talk about that today.
Interesting. I like that. That sounds like the making of a pod.
We are going to talk about a thing that we keep coming back to, but we're going to do it in a new way today. And I think it's been fruitful for me over the course of the week to think about this theme. You have been gifted an insight from His Holiness Matthew McConaughey. And I think you should share that with us and talk about the inspiration for this pod.
Absolutely. So I'm reading his book, Green Lights, been recommended to me by a number of my friends, including some of our listeners. And it's a great book. McConaughey is the man for a variety of reasons, but it's a really insightful take. I don't know where I would put McConaughey on the political spectrum, to be perfectly honest. I would just put him probably somewhere roughly in the middle. But he's got early in the book, he's got this, his book is sort of a memoir that he pulls from years and years of diaries. And he's got this one thing that really caught my attention. The headline of this, you know, this page is "Conservative Early, Liberal Late." And I'll read you just a few of the lines from this page. It says, "Create structure so you can have freedom. Clean up so you can get dirty. Choreograph, then dance. Learn to read and write before you start making up words. Creativity needs borders. Individuality needs resistance. The earth needs gravity. Without them, there is no form, no art, only chaos." And this struck me, I think, for reasons which will be better understood with a little bit of background. You know, we have talked mostly or in large part about politics on this podcast. And in that, in doing so, we throw around progressive, conservative, liberal terms like these. And these terms do have their meaning substantively in politics, but they also have sort of a different, although sometimes related meaning when it comes down to personalities and temperaments. And I had heard about this from a handful of folks, one of them being Jordan Peterson. He discusses this on occasion, and he sort of describes some of the traits that often predict, they often predict the political substance, but they're really just describing people and their personalities. A liberal often high in openness. Openness is one of these sort of big five traits, and low in conscientiousness. That often looks like someone who's very interested in seeking new opportunities. That can devolve into sort of disorder if not sort of managed appropriately. On the flip side, conservative, traditionally low in openness and high in conscientiousness. They have an instinct to preserve tradition and order, but they can also become sort of stuck in a very rules-based existence. And what struck me about what McConaughey is talking about here is that at different times we need both in our lives. And there's often a process of learning something, actually learning the rules, learning the traditions, learning how to operate in that, and then sort of allowing, he uses the word your freak flag, but like allowing your creative spark to go. That's kind of the framing that I was thinking about. I think assumptions I bring to it is that both as individuals and as institutions, we need both of these instincts. And that I do think I think most people probably have a leaning, but I know in my own life, I would say that I lean in the conservative direction. But I do feel both of these impulses sort of operating in myself. So, with that introduction, how did you respond when I sent you a picture of this page? Well, what did you think? Is this, am I off my rocker over here?
I mean, it's hard for me to believe these are actually journal entries from Matthew McConaughey. Like it's what I think I need to sit down and do when I sit down and write in my journal, which is write things that could someday be published in a book. If he actually is writing these things in his journal, then all right, he's on a different level and I'm not even going to.
All right.
So I first thought okay, we've already taken this topic on, but I think as I've thought about it, I've realized how much this is a question of personality, of identity. And I think as we are exploring on the pod, what kind of themes we like talking about and what kind of themes relate with our audience, I think it's good for us to experiment with this. It's going to be much more personal. And I think maybe even more so than politically, personality wise, you and I really are different in this way. I mean, if you would call yourself conservative, I don't know what the other word is. Is it McConaughey says liberal? That word just feels like I haven't heard it describe personalities before in the way that I have heard conservative define personalities. But if that's the word, I mean, that's me. I definitely lean in that direction. So, yeah. And I think you and I have experienced this in our friendship that we lean and think and move differently because we have different feelings about conservative, liberal in our personality.
Yeah.
So you had a series of questions that I really liked and I took some time to think about them as well. I think they should just provide the structure for our conversation today. So the first question you asked was, why am I a blank, right? Mm-hmm. And why am I either a conservative or a liberal? So, and for you, it sounds like you lean conservative. And again, this is about our personality, our way of being, our way of moving through the world. Why? Where does that come from for you?
Yeah. The easy, simple, obvious answer is my family. My parents and my brother would all sort of identify as conservatives, I suspect. That doesn't hold for my extended family, but because we had moved to California, it was really the four of us that were the principal unit. But lots of folks are raised in conservative families and become more liberal as they get older, or vice versa. So this doesn't necessarily explain everything. I think the upbringing that I had was one that where there was a lot of built-in structure. There were sort of rules that we were expected to follow, and again, I think people, as they mature can break in one of two ways. I think people like myself, for better and for worse, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, often sort of ingrain in themselves that feeling of like needing to understand the rules and follow them and perceiving high consequences if those rules are broken. I think another personality, and this might just be sort of the nature nurture spectrum, militates against those rules in a pretty substantial way. It's the rebellious teenage years, and so again, it's sort of it seems like not a simple question to answer, because it seems both like there was a family structure there, and then there was a temperament which caused me to respond to it in a particular way.
Sure. So nature versus nurture.
Yeah, well, I think nature and nurture here.
Nature and nurture.
What was your experience with it?
Yeah.
How would you answer the question?
I mean, I'm looking for the right word. So keep thinking about that. But why am I a liberal in my personality, or why am I progressive in my personality, or not conservative?
Can we pause there for a second?
Yeah, go.
I Are you resistant to the word liberal? What's going on there?
I mean, I've heard conservative used to explain people's actions, ways of thinking, beliefs. Liberal, I just less so. I just feel like that word is often tied to politics. So that's it. I mean, I like the word. But yeah.
I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense. Although I think liberal fits better than progressive, which to me, progressive has a much more political bent to it. Maybe in today in particular, as progressives distinguish themselves from liberals in the political sphere, than liberal does. We can use whatever term you want. I just think it's sort of an interesting response that I'm hearing from you.
Well, I'd like, maybe we should use the word renegade. So why am I a renegade? So a couple things. First, I think it's definitely my temperament, right? Like I am an undiagnosed ADHD kiddo. You know, I mean, I just remember there being hints of that in my development as a young child. And of course, I mean, I was famous for falling back in my chair and talking out of turn. And, you know, I have staples in my head that when I cut my hair really short, everyone can see. And it's this line in my head. And it's because I was running down the stairs too fast and I fell into a corner of the wall. And like, that's me. Like, that's very much as my personality. So I think part of it is temperament. Like, I always am excited about the new, the next, the whatever it might be. I mean, there's something about my attention that's ready for something new. I think also so much of this was encouraged at a Montessori school.
Mm. You
know, I went to Montessori was effectively my first experience of education from age 4 to age 9, 8. So yeah. These really formative years. And, you know, in a Montessori school, like there's not a structure. There's not a classroom where all the chairs are facing the same way. Like, you're just free to roam. You're free to do whatever you want with your time. I remember at age 6 and 7 embracing, you know, moving around the classroom at will to study math with like hands-on math or like play Oregon Trail or like sing with my teacher on the auto harp or like go play with the animals. And it was like the world of my oyster, literally. And then I was brought to the public school system in third grade. And the first thing they did was give me an IQ test because they were so sure that the only explanation for my inability to fit into that system was I was just dumb. I had been formed that way in Montessori school. And then the last thing I was thinking about was, my parents are very conservative, and I don't mean politically. I mean, you know, and I love my parents and I respect them profoundly, but they are, and I'm sure they would say this about themselves without hesitation. They're conservative. They're very thoughtful. They're deliberate. They're not people who are known necessarily for risk-taking or being impulsive or being spontaneous. They're very deliberate in how they move through the world. And I think as a kid, I said, I'm going to be the anti my parents, not because I didn't love them. I love my parents, but just because, you know, sometimes I think as kids, we either decide we're going to fall in line or go the opposite direction. And I was like, you know, I'm going to go a different way. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of it. Now, as I get older and as I see the values of being conservative in temperament, I just admire my parents more than I ever was able to when I was a kid. And I'm trying to learn some of those things in terms of their careful way through the world and the way in which I think that's especially important for a family. But I think all those things contributed to the mystery and enigma that is the renegade.
I'm trying to find the best way to roast you for using that term. You're in fine company with Obama and Springsteen. And they're very. Yeah,
you shouldn't have let me know that, because now I'm going to find any way I can to associate myself with them in that word. So, yeah, but I think, you know, one of the things that we were trying to dig into in our thinking about this conversation was, how does our our personality disposition to one or the other, how does it impact our decisions in the world? And not just like, not just our voting decisions, but like just the important decisions of our life. What is being a mostly conservative person in temperament mean for you when it comes to making decisions?
I think I'm still working this out. My post-college life has largely been a pattern of settling into some sort of professional endeavor, doing it for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and then pulling sort of the carpet out from under myself and going to do something totally new. Now I haven't been out of school that long, so it's only happened I guess two or three times depending on how you count, but there is part of me that really loves maybe what McConaughey was talking about, where you have knowledge of the space and the craft and the people. Those are his words. And you kind of have a feeling of knowing what you're doing, but there is also an instinct in me that starts to get a little bit impatient and starts to really want to do something new and different. And working this out on the fly, I don't necessarily know if we're just making a category error and that's like just a different thing entirely what we're talking about, but it does sort of feel related. So if I sound garbled, it's because I'm still trying to figure it out, I guess.
Can I offer you a framework that I've been thinking about? Okay. So I have been thinking that one of the ways of drawing the difference between how a conservative and a liberal makes decisions is in the thinking versus feeling dialectic. So if you think about making decisions based more off of feeling or more off of thinking, which of those do you feel like resonates more with you?
This might surprise you, but I think I've made most of the biggest decisions in my life based on feeling.
So talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think amongst the people who know me, like a rational decision maker is probably one of the things that they would eventually describe me as. Like, I think I certainly present that to the world. And in a lot of the like day-to-day decisions or the medium significant decisions, that is sort of how I operate in the world. But in some of the bigger decisions, I sort of feel into them or fall into them or just respond to a particular circumstance in a way that maybe isn't, I don't think it happens in such a way that would be in the face of a reasoned judgment to the contrary. But it is almost like the intuition is prior to the rational decision-making process. And in some cases, like the reason then becomes either a way to explain. In the best case, it would be a way to like stress test to make sure you're not making an absolutely ridiculous decision. But it's less, yeah, I just think it's less that I'm thinking it through every step of the way. I mean, I think, you know, going to law school is an example of that. It was something that I had been, every fall for a number of years, I kept feeling like maybe this is something that I should explore. If I had sat down and just reasoned it out based on what was sort of best from a career or a financial or success perspective, it would be kind of hard, given where I was at 28, to come to the conclusion that this was the right decision. And yet I made it up anyways, because it felt like it was the right step to take, the first small step towards that, which in this case was the LSAT, and then every sort of successive small step towards this big decision felt like the right thing to do at the time.
So does that mean that you are not conservative temperamentally when it comes to decision making, or is is feeling-based decision-making just a common human experience?
I think it's the latter. I mean, I think it's possible that conservatives and liberals will sort of have different interior movements and different feelings to different things. They might be really responsive to certain situations and less responsive to others in terms of their own feelings and judgment. But I don't really think that, you know, that conservatives are rational decision makers and liberals are intuitive decision makers. My guess is, my expectation is that they could both go either way.
Interesting.
Do you disagree?
I don't know if I disagree. Am I surprised to hear you say this? Maybe. I mean, because I think I was thinking that this was going to be a clear difference for us.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you my own, the way that being liberal in temperament affects my decision making, and then let's see if we can draw a distinction here, or maybe there's none to draw. But so here's the image I had of how I make decisions. When our friend Adam and I dropped out of college and went to India, at some point in our trip, which was extended, we met this person who like was helping us understand how to navigate India. And basically giving us some advice. He was a local, giving us some advice about how to eat and drink our way through India and not get sick. And he said, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to take whatever you're about to eat or drink and hold it to your chest. And then wait, and then see if you lean forward a little bit or you lean backward a little bit.
Mm.
If you lean forward, it's good to go. If you lean backward, do not under any circumstances eat it. And I have remembered that forever. Like I think about that all the time, and I don't necessarily do it, but
did it work?
Did it work? I'm sure we got sick in India, but that may not, it may, because maybe we
user error.
It was either user error or was like the one meal that we didn't do it. But I the reason I remember that so clearly is that it just resonates with how I make decisions, right? And like for me, I make decisions based on how they feel. And for me, thinking only comes in when something doesn't feel right. And then I think my way until I have the right feeling. And then again, the new decision that I make is also just based on that feeling. So I mean, there are kind of countless examples of this. And it's amazing to me how almost all the most important decisions in my life were made almost instantly based on feeling. So applying to Santa Clara, accepting to go to Santa Clara, deciding to apply to El Salvador, you know, when I met Maddie, like the house that we now live in. I mean, there are so many things that are really important decisions that were for me almost instantaneous moments of intuition.
Mm.
And that for me feels like a very natural decision-making place.
Do you call those movements of the spirit?
What's a movement of the spirit?
If I remember my high school Ignatian spirituality class, which I may not very well, but we talked about decision-making, and I thought, the basic framework was being attentive to movements of the spirit in a particular direction, and then using your reason and your cognitive capacities, God-given, to sort of, you know, see if that movement makes sense, and then based on that process, go from there. I might just be reading that into my memory of that class.
As a side note, like, having been a theology teacher for high school students for 5 years is a very gratifying moment to see a 32-year-old remember something from his theology high school classroom. Yeah, would I call it movements of the spirit? Only when it's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only when it's right. And when it's not, it's just me. It's me thinking that I can make all decisions with impunity based off intuition. I mean, I get a lot of my decisions right very quickly. and I get a lot of my decisions wrong very quickly. So yeah, I will say this, and this is where maybe we can draw some distinction. I struggle to understand people who want to take a really long time to make a decision. Like it's sometimes it can be hard for me to understand that processing. So, and almost I marvel at it. So my wife has been leading this incredible remodel of our bathroom, and it's really special, and it's not something I could have done. And it was like time to paint the walls. And if it was my job to paint the walls, here's my decision-making process. I look at the walls. Okay, great. I go to Home Depot. I find a paint. I buy it. I bring it home. I paint. And then I move on to the next thing. Not because like I'm super efficient, but because that's just how I think. Maddie like looked at the walls, looked at a bunch of different possibilities, went to a couple of paint stores, got some paint samples, put them up on the wall, looked at them, thought about them for a couple of days, got a couple like actual little samples of paint, painted them on the wall, looked at them. And it's like, wow, that is an incredible kind of decision-making that feels almost like I could force myself to act like that, but it is so counter to me.
Hmm.
Now, I would associate this with your kind of decision-making, but have I misunderstood you?
No, this is right. I think there's still a real element of intuition there. Like, I don't know if you were to ask Maddie, which one do you like better? If she could give you a detailed rational explanation, she might just say this one feels better.
Right.
But I very much identify with that kind of decision-making. Honestly, it drives me crazy that it takes me a long time to make decisions. It's something that I sometimes wish I did differently. But what I think is going on is that, and maybe this is sort of the conservative temperament, whatever my current status quo is, has a lot of weight. Like there's a lot of inertia behind what I'm currently doing. So, and every decision is either I'm going to change something I'm already doing, or I'm going to add something new, which would become something I'm already doing and then would become hard to change later. So I think that is sort of why it can feel difficult to make decisions, or it can require a lot of, I kind of call it background processing sometimes. Sometimes I have to like go on with my life while a decision is, you know, I think gobbling up bandwidth in the background and probably in unhealthy ways sometimes. Mm. But it just takes that because it, you know, to change my career, that was a multi-year process of getting to the point where I was ready to do that. And I think it's because I do value highly what's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a relationship between that and risk?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what you're describing is what conscientiousness looks like for a conservative. Like when you first talk about conscientiousness as a conservative kind of ethos, you know, that I think any of us who might feel like we are liberal in temperament would grind against that. But this is what it means. It's like, I want to be very thoughtful about my present and about my future and about my past before I make a decision. And I think that is effectively what it means to evaluate risk, is to be really thoughtful about the way in which a decision is going to have ripple effects of the decisions, you know, I'm going to make in the future and I'm making now. And so, yes, I think that is good, because for me, I feel like I operate in a world where anything can change at any time. And that's a very different way of acting, and it's not conscientious in the same way. So, but talk about risk, because, you know, I'm trying to think. You have both, I think people would maybe call you risk averse in some ways. I can think of certain examples. I can think of one example in particular that's been a particular risk we've bumped into a couple times that you know, you sort of said no, like no. But I mean, in other ways, you've made massive leaps in your career and in your world that most people wouldn't consider taking. And I think many people would call that incredibly risky. So what do you feel like? Do you feel like you would call your risk tolerance conservative? And how would you talk about risk in your life?
There are some inconsistencies in how that plays out for sure. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like narrow rule following, you know, like I came to college like not wanting to drink because I, you know, at least in my head at the time, I felt like this is going to be bad for school and baseball and I could get in trouble. I think, you know, with the benefit of some hindsight, I was really afraid of that experience. It was not something I had done before and was not something that I felt comfortable doing, particularly in the way that drinking is sometimes introduced to folks as college freshmen. But that's just an example of being sort of very like hyper risk adverse, in a sort of a fear-based way, based on a conception of what the rules are and the relation that I need to keep to those rules. You know, that's a narrow example that, you know, in that particular case, I moved on with the help of you, Quentin, and some of our listeners to some.
I am not a person who helped someone learn how to drink in college. I'm sure I had my first beer after you. I could be wrong, but you also, you know, not all of us were carrying around the weight and mantle of being, you know, athletes of some particular stature at our schools. So I think you had good reason to be conservative.
I don't know that holds across the scope of athletes in college, but
it literally holds the opposite. I've never been like more in awe of people drinking than being around athletes in college.
To your point, I think in narrow senses like that, I have been risk averse or slow to step into those sorts of things, in such a way that for a while I had a conception of myself as risk averse. And I was actually, I threw that out to my dad in conversation once, and he pointed out, I think, what you've alluded to, which is that on some big things, I have made fairly big life changes, which are not necessarily risk averse.
Right.
And I don't necessarily know how to reconcile those things. I think maybe it's a framing thing at the outset. It is not necessarily the case that that a conservative temperament is totally impervious to change, that the life of someone who's conservative, their circumstances can't change. That I think would be, you know, both sides of this spectrum have sort of have a place they go that is unhealthy, and a conservative unwilling completely to make any changes, that would just be sort of a very unhealthy manifestation of the conservative temperament. And so just something that I tease at the outset, maybe this is, there's a sort of a, both of these impulses at work, and there's just enough of sort of a liberal impulse to sort of pull me back from a conservative impulse that if left to its own devices might become stagnant. but no, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. How about for you on this question of risk?
Man, this was fruitful reflection for me, because I think risk is one of the most powerful forces in my life. And the way I was trying to come up with an image for it, and I couldn't, but the word that I came up for to describe risk and how I approach it is cumulative. So meaning at each stage, when I meet a risk, the question that I feel in my heart is like, if I want to be the kind of person who takes big risks, I have to be the kind of person who takes this risk. And if I don't, then I can't be the kind of person who takes the bigger kind of risks. And there are just like limitless examples of this in my life. I mean, some of the most important things in my life fall into this. And this is a story that you know, but you know, when I was 23 and I was in Boston in graduate school, I walked into a Starbucks one day. My dating life had become very stale. And there was this beautiful woman in front of me with a motorcycle helmet. And I like really felt like I needed to ask her out, but had never done anything like that before. I mean, I had asked people out, but never maybe like in kind of a random situation. We were talking and you know, I thought maybe I should buy her coffee, and then I didn't do it. And then we said goodbye and she walked out of the Starbucks and I sat down at my table and I thought like, holy shit, like I'm 23 and there are a lot of things I want from my life. And all of them are going to be bigger risks than this one. Mm-hmm. Like for me, when it comes to risk tolerance, it's not like what's the worst that can happen if I do this? It's like, what will I not be able to become if I don't do this? And I sat there at that table for a while. And then I, you know, sprinted out the door after this person, chased her down the street and asked her out on a date. And she said yes. And we went on a couple dates and you know, that was that. But those kind of decisions put me in the place where I could at age 30, you know, walk into a grocery store and meet my wife and know that I could talk to her. Mm-hmm. And that was the most, you know, I mean, that's the most important thing that's ever happened to me. So, but not just that, I mean, I think professionally, like there are so many risks that I take that are only possible because of previous risks that I took. Mm-hmm. Or even like, I love doing karaoke and like the risk involved in that, but only because Adam and I in our senior year sang at a lunch one time when no one else was signing up for karaoke. And we kind of felt bad for the karaoke guy. And we felt like we're seniors and we can finally do this. But it was like the most painful risk of my life. Like, I just think risks are cumulative. And for me, like every risk is sort of a challenge. Like, hey, if you don't take this one, like which one, what are you not going to be able to do in the future?
I love that.
Yeah.
To me, that is how character development happens. And yet we don't think about it enough in that way, that if there's a place that you want to go, somebody willing to take big risks in this case, or it could be someone willing to speak the truth when it's hard to speak the truth. If you're not going to take the small risks, or if you're not going to take, say, the small things as with as much truth as possible, that end goal is going to be out of reach, because each time you do it, it forms part of your character.
Totally.
And so, yeah, I love that. That's great.
Hmm. Do you feel like, are there times where you sort of say, okay, I lean more towards a conservative way of moving through the world, I need to lean against that. Like it's time to actively move against, you know, my baseline. Like when is that something, when do you do that? When is it time to do that? Can you give an example of doing that recently? Like, because I just think, you know, all of us probably going to tend to one direction or another. And it seems pretty obvious that the best kind of person is someone who can probably do both and knows the right time for both. So anyways, let's take that anywhere.
You've brought your dating life to the table. Well, now your married life into the pot a couple of times. And I think there's something there for me on this one, which is sort of as I've thought about it, it's an interesting, it seems to illustrate both instincts in me. So Anna, my girlfriend, and I met 14 years ago as freshmen in college. And really from the end of college onwards, we had a wonderful friendship that was always from afar. We were never living in the same place. And there was there was chemistry there. There was interest on both sides at various times, not necessarily at the same time. But I think for me, there was a bit of there was some real conservatism there, not living in the same place, not necessarily feeling like the risk of putting myself fully out there, putting our friendship on the table was something that I was able to do in those moments over the years when the moments came up. And at a certain point, I finally got there, and then she said no, and then she got there, and then I said no, and then finally, after a period of not speaking very much and a series of texts and letters, it was time to just throw caution to the wind and throw what was really a Hail Mary, I think, for us, which was, do you want to go and just force a time for us to be together in the same space, to see if what has been here for a long time is still there. And, I mean, are any of these things conservative or liberal? I don't know, but what I might sort of draw out from this that's relevant to our conversation is that the inertia and the risk up front made it, I think it was difficult for someone with a conservative impulse to pull the trigger as early as, in retrospect, might have been justified. Although I think the way we've gotten here is exactly how we were supposed to get here. And maybe it's precisely because of that that I sort of realized that sometimes it does take the big leap, maybe in this area of life more than any other, although probably in a lot of areas elsewhere too, that the biggest things in life are maybe less likely to be incremental, or at least over the period of a long course of incremental small steps and growth and slow momentum building, there may be one pivotal moment where all the chips have to go down on the table. And I'm glad that happened and that we are where we are now, which would not have happened sort of but for that moment. So how's that for a story?
It's a power. I mean, hey, this is a big moment on the pod for you to share this story. Yeah. And I'm sure Anna will appreciate it and our listeners as well. And I so admire the decision that you two made. And I mean, it took both of you, but since it's just you and I here on the pod, I'll highlight your role in that decision. Like, you know, to identify that you have a particular way of generally making decisions, but then to see something so important and to embrace and not just embrace, but like fling yourself into a different temperament for the sake of a greater good. It's pretty cool. That may be one of the benefits of reflecting on these temperaments is having a chance to see when there is a real need for the other.
Yeah.
For leaning the other way.
Yeah. You know, you have brought up the bent stick a number of times. Sometimes I think
it's not a pod if we don't go bent stick,
and sometimes in ways that I don't think we're totally on point. But those are different pods, and dude, no, I think this is what I think prompted the pod. This episode in particular was, how can we learn about ourselves, about our baselines, such that we can identify when actually maybe this is precisely the right way to operate and other times when it's not. And in doing so, how can we better understand both the people immediately around us and sort of our broader political conversation, where I think these instincts, they show up in lots of different ways and ways that we're not always fully aware of.
No. Ask me the same question.
Quentin, what is an area where you have felt or identified that a more conservative way of being might be the appropriate response?
Yeah, I struggle with this question. Like, I think there is a pride in me that will surprise nobody who knows me, but there's a pride in me that just feels like, you know, I like the way that I move through the world. But, and so, you know, I really do feel like this is something I need to grow in. And I need to grow in my ability to, I think, to embrace a more conservative, conscientious, thoughtful, maybe even cautious, in the best sense, way of moving through the world. I'll tell you a couple things of where I think this happens a little bit, where it shows up, and then I'll tell you where I really want it to show up. Mm-hmm. and an area that I'm really looking ahead to in my life. So a couple places where it shows up, you know that a lot of the things that I have in my life are just based on the generosity of people in my life and family members. You know, so much of my life is based on the generosity of family members. And I will tell you that makes me very careful about, for example, our home. So like I took so much pride and joy in using a pressure washer recently. I rented a pressure washer from Home Depot and pressure washed our sidewalk and our driveway. And it was like, yes, like this is what it means to commit to care for something, to do the small things over a long period of time that show a what's the word I'm looking for? Like a stability of commitment and care, that it's not like what's the next thing. It's like, no, it is this home, this plot of land that we are going to care for and tend to and take a lot of pride in that. I watched my dad do that growing up. I mean, and I thought it was so dumb when I was younger. Like, what on earth is my dad doing? Like caring so much for the way that the bushes were cut. But, you know, my dad came from a more, I think, you know, simple and humble background than I did. And he really appreciated those things. And do I think those are that instinct is a conservative instinct? I kind of do. Like, I kind of think that sort of care for place over an extended period of time is an example of the conservative instinct. And, and like, not just that you do it, like liberals can do that too, but taking joy in it, like taking a particular joy in the preservation of the what you already have.
Yeah.
The other one, go.
Can I give you one for you?
Oh God, yes.
I mean, and everything that follows is a huge compliment. Although the first bit is funny, the Quentin that I met in college, let's just say that your work and your sleep hours were not necessarily aligned with the rest of the world. Like keeping a schedule was not your thing. And there is something about that sort of an openness to experience different moments of creativity, like the sort of the structure of the day doesn't necessarily have to play out there. But I mean, you now have a really rigorous routine that involves sort of when you do your work early in the mornings, when you work out. And this sounds like a little thing, but I do actually think that sort of is part of a conservative temperament. And the other thing that I had been thinking about a little bit too was that sometimes that can be a sort of a platform and a foundation that allows risk-taking elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's McConaughey's whole point, right? Yeah. Bring it back to the start. And I think that's a really good point that both temperaments have to be in us in order to preserve the other. Mm. And so I'm with you on that. Yeah, I think that's right. And that's true. That is something that I have had to, I think, forcibly teach myself. And that is the interesting thing about the way that all of us are wired, is like, if we're one way or the other, it means that in order to move in the other direction, it doesn't come naturally. It has to be an act of will. So I will say, you know, one other area that I think I move against the liberal baseline of my life is just in my commitment to institutions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 32 and I'm like, I am more I am more devotedly Catholic than I was when I was, you know, nine. And I'm also more hyper aware of the flaws of the Catholic faith. But like, it just seems like I have this really strong commitment to the Catholic Church. And like, I have a strong commitment to the United States of America. Like, and I have a strong commitment to the organizations that I belong to. And I just think like, I think a loyalty to institutions is a conservative leaning instinct. And there's something in that that has always been a part of me. But I will close with this, and then I'll let you give your own thoughts on this question. But this is my last word, is I have so much growth to do in this, and in terms of learning the conservative temperament and leaning into it. And the place where I most want this to happen is for my kids. I obviously don't have kids yet, but I think about how important it is for kids to have a stable home and how important that is for them to be able to develop and experiment and become the person that they want to be. And I want to be able to provide that. Like, I want to be the gravity for them so that they can learn how to be their own human being. To go back to McConaughey's image of, you know, the earth needs gravity in order for us to learn how to dance. So, and that's something that I honestly just don't feel like I have yet. I don't feel like I have that consistency, like that kind of temperance and prudence that I think a kid needs to have as a father. Now, I do think that part of what kids do is that they just bring it out of people like us, right? Like, just like marriage brings things out of us that we just didn't have beforehand, and relationships do. But, you know, for my future kids who will be listening to this pod, I just want to say that I hope that by the time that they enter the world, that this is an instinct that I have learned to lean into: the conservative, the conscientious, the careful, the thoughtful, the deliberate, you know, all of those things.
Well, I have no doubt that if that's something you want, and in any case, you're well on your way. Plus, good news is you'll have help.
I'll have help. My testosterone will drop.
I was talking about Maddie, but...
I know. So, no, I will have help. And Madeline, I just said Madeline because I'm sitting at her desk and I'm seeing a note that someone wrote her and says Madeline. Maddie is so good at this. So
believe it.
I think I will learn this from her.
Yeah.
So yeah. How about for you? Where's an area in your life going forward that you want to, you wish to be, you know, more leaning into your liberal temperament?
For me, there has always been an instinct and a desire to do creative work in some capacity and to sort of produce. And I don't know that this is necessarily, this isn't the healthy conservative temperament, but the sort of more fear rules-based side of it has had me for many years just afraid of the consequences or afraid of the risks of putting myself out there creatively. This podcast exists basically to, in a small way, push against that risk, just like we talked about earlier, by, you know, the being able to ask someone out as a practicing ground for the bigger risks later. But
worth highlighting that you are the reason. I mean, and I think about that all the time when it comes to how long do we do this? Do we do five? Do we do, you know, 12 episodes? Do we do 1200? Like, I think about, you know, this was started because of your desire to lean against a potential fear and your desire to create, which is cool that I got to be swept up into this.
You know, I appreciate that. I think it is something that at this stage I needed help with, and that you were there and finally, after talking about various projects, this is the one that sort of clicked. But that process for me is nowhere near finished. And will always be sort of a I mean, hopefully a continual process of stepping a little bit further and further out from what's comfortable. You know, I feel much more comfortable now in episode, I guess this is 11 or 12.
12.
Than I did in episode one. And then the question becomes like, you know, how do I continue to move further out from a foundation of what feels comfortable? So I think it's so interesting how we've been using these sort of conservative and liberal temperaments, concepts of risk and comfort and stability in pretty loose ways. And I think a reflection for me is like, how well do these things stack up? Like how much, when we talked about decision-making a lot, I think this has been a good conversation for me just as a way to sort of try to work these things out and to maybe think a little bit more deeply about how I operate, which is sometimes a mystery.
I think that, you know, I already said I had my last word, but I'm going to get my last word in, which is, this has come up multiple times in our conversation, how much you need to identify a companion who can teach you the other way. Hmm. Like, you just need it. I mean, or not teach you, but help you move the other way. And I think about that for myself. Like, if I want to become able to be more fluent in the conservative temperament, like, who are the people in my life who are really good at that? You're one of them. But I think about my dad, and like, you know, he recently got a boat, and it's been really fun for us to hang out on it. And I think it provides for us an opportunity to spend more time together. And I don't think he listens to the podcast, but, you know, even if he does, this is just praise for him. Like, it gives me, I think, a reason to pay closer attention to him and how he moves through the world and learn from that. Like, little things like how much time he spends, you know, preparing the boat to be ready to go out on the water, or like cleaning it up afterwards, things that I hate doing. Like, I think it's good for me in this conversation to realize that it is possible to learn the other way, but you definitely need guides and companions, and they're friggin' all around us.
I love that. That's a great way to end it. Thanks, Quentin.
That was good, man. I had two glasses of mezcal in this conversation.
Hey, no wonder it was good.
It was yours. You bought it for me.
I did.
So I'm almost at the end of it, but really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for suggesting it.
Thanks, brother. We'll do it again soon.
Maybe next week.